This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Whitehead is the executive director and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, and he joins us in studio once a month for a regular update and discussion about your rights as an American. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I always look forward to this. I told Allison today, I said, guess who's coming on today? John Whitehead's coming on today. She said, oh, I'm going to listen. I like those conversations. Why don't we pick up just where we were talking? We were talking with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling, and He made his position on this marriage amendment very clear. And it is a solid Republican conservative position. But reading some of your recent commentaries at the Rutherford Institute website, that's rutherford.org, you don't agree with that 100%.
Well, my main concern is that same-sex marriage obviously is not the major attack against the traditional family. It's the divorce rate. Any psychologist, sociologist I've talked to, even pastors I talked to agree with that. In fact, there was a recent poll done among pastors, and they asked them what was the biggest threat to the family, and they listed like 15 things, and same-sex marriage was not in any of it. So it was, you know, broken families, absentee fathers, influence of the media, and those kind of things. So the prime attack on what people consider the traditional family is a divorce rate. As the New York Times reported here last week, what we call traditional families is now less than 50% of the population for the first time in terms of couples being
really
there. Yeah, so it's becoming a minority, and it's the divorce rate. It's
which is where right now it's always hovered
it's
at
over 50%. But yeah. The amazing thing is that you would think that born again Christians, so called, would have an edge up on it. Their divorce rate is just as high. It's higher in the Bible Belt. So. If we want to fix the marriage, you have to fix the marriages and what's wrong with the family today. And you have kids living in a lot of broken families and things. And, you know, as anybody, again, who's read what sociologists and sociologists say about families without fathers and those kind of things, it's very, very difficult on children, especially boys. So if you think you're going to fix the family by passing this amendment, you're not. So I guess, and Virginia law already has several laws saying that you can't have sex same marriage, and and you have the federal statute says that you don't have to recognize the laws of other states in terms of marriage.
So yeah, there's plenty of existing laws already on the books.
It's already done in Virginia.
Yeah.
So the question is why this amendment? I think that
and of course the lieutenant governor was arguing, well, our concern is that you have activist judges who are going to recognize these laws and call them unconstitutional. So we need to make it part of the Constitution.
Yeah, I think in states, now, you know, New Jersey Supreme Court today ruled under their Equal Protection Clause of their state constitution that same-sex couples have to be treated equally. So that's changed just today in New Jersey. But if you look at New Jersey law, New Jersey had already basically had mirrored Vermont in a lot of their activities in terms of gay couples.
So New Jersey wasn't going down the path like Virginia and Ohio.
No, Virginia is totally different. That's the neat thing about diversity that we see in this country and the dying or the dead concept of federalism, basically. But I think it's up to the people of Virginia to do that. But I think the question that I pose to people, are you going to help the family? All this energy and all this money from outside interest or wherever they come into the state to do these kind of things, if you put that same amount of energy into working on couples who have problems and the divorce rate, that would help the family much more. But I think that what we're doing is we're creating the illusion by this amendment that somehow we've protected the family, and as we know it, but we haven't, because of the divorce rate. I asked a pastor recently of a large church. I said, "What's the biggest problem in your church that you have with men and women?" He said, "Well, the divorce rate." But he says, and this is a big Baptist church, he said, but pornography. My guy's reading pornography,
really?
Watching on the internet. Yeah. And so he didn't say it was gay marriage, and that's not the issue. So we just worry that two things here. One, people believe this is the thing that's going to fix it. This is the Band-Aid. So we're looking at symptoms, not causes. That's a big problem. And we're not really looking at the divorce rate and broken families, which, as anybody knows, broken families really hurt children. And we know that.
What about the folks who say, well, this may not fix marriage, but it's going to sanctify and protect the definition of marriage, and that's where we need to start. Because
well, it'll keep it that definition in that category, yeah. But I think, as we saw with New Jersey's going the other way, I mean, that's the so-called genius of federalism. But I think what we have to look at here is that, you know, there came a time in the history of this country, if things keep changing the way they look like they're changing sociologically in this country, is more acceptance of gay people, what you're going to eventually get is probably the U.S. Supreme Court moving in the same direction they did with Board of Brown versus Board of Education in 1954 when they knocked down segregated schools. And Virginia at the time in their constitution had amended their constitution to have segregated schools. It was ruled unconstitutional.
So you see this sort of as like some of the folks who've argued that we should vote no on this amendment, you sort of see it as, well, in the past, they used to say that, you know, a black man couldn't marry a white woman, that it was against nature, and all the same arguments they make now about a man marrying a man.
Yeah, but like I was saying, sociologically, the way the country seems to be moving is more acceptance of gays. Even though you have gays populate primetime television shows, movies, everybody's coming out of the closet.
Right.
So the question is, and I'm a father with five children. How do you protect the family? That's the real issue here. And I think that we've gone past the real issue, and we spent a tremendous amount of money, a tremendous amount of time debating these kind of things, and the divorce rate's getting worse every day. And so the question is if you really want to help the family, I'd say this to pastors out there, and I think many pastors really realize it if they sit down and think about it, they look at their own congregations, and maybe it's all these people that are really pushing these kind of things. We need to work on the divorce rate.
John Whitehead is the founder and executive director of the Rutherford Institute. He joins us about once a month for a regular update and conversation on your rights as Americans. Let's go to Steve in Charlottesville. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. Steve, you're on with John Rutherford. John Whitehead, I'm sorry. I do that all the time. I'm great, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there on a fairly cool day.
Yeah, it's a beautiful autumn day, isn't it?
It sure is. But my comment to Mr. Whitehead is he is seemingly making the same arguments that Lieutenant Governor Bowling talked about in the last segment, which is don't talk about what the marriage amendment issue is and is not, but let's cloak it in things like it's not going to address the divorce issue in America, which it was never intended to do. Let's try and compare it to the civil rights movement, which is, quite frankly, offensive to black people that actually experienced those issues.
I did not do that. I just said that.
Well, you did talk about it as a civil rights thing. You talked about
I talked about the Brown versus Board of Education decision. I think that, yeah, now, what I was saying is that eventually the Supreme Court's probably going to address this issue, much like that, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not looking to attack you for it, but by saying that, there's a connotation, whether intended or not, that this is a discriminatory thing, and someday will have to be addressed by the Supreme Court. You didn't present it as this is the legal issue. This is why the Supreme Court should or should not be getting involved, and where I think it's going to go. I would prefer if you would talk in those terms as opposed
to
the other thing.
What's your question?
My question is, you know, what is it about this bill that you find to be so offensive in terms of things contrary to what Lieutenant Governor Bowling?
No, I'm not saying it's offensive. I think, again, I talked about the genius of federalism. I think that the people of Virginia have a right if they want to amend their constitution. That's entirely their right if they want to do that. And it looks like over 50% of the people, if the polls are correct, agree with that. Like I say, as a father and as people I talk to, The major concern, and what I've heard from a lot of people, is this protect the sanctity of marriage. But the sanctity of marriage is really in trouble. I mean, it's what we call the sanctity of marriage. Marriage across the board in this country.
And if I hear you right, you're saying what's not really threatening marriage is gay marriage.
No, it's not threatening.
It's divorce.
No, it's not threatening marriage. What's threatening marriage? And I just say, you know, it's what we tend to do wrong in this country a lot of times. We major on the minors, and I think that's what we're doing here. I mean, again, it's people's right to do that, but do we want to protect the American family? That's the bottom line that people see. And I think if we want to do that, then let's take the millions of dollars spent on something like this and put it into to counselors and get churches involved in the in families and helping children and broken families. There's a lot of things that could be done there that would be really, really beneficial right off the bat.
Yeah, and I'd rather have the dialogue about those things, but those are all separate issues. I mean, earlier you said...
Well, I'm not sure they're separate because the focus of the argument is on the family. And so the question is, what about the family and why is the family important? And that's another issue, by the way. Why is the family... The family is really important in history, and a number of people recognize that the traditional family is basically the institution from which democracy springs. And if we lose the traditional family as we know it, which did not exist in Roman times, it's basically post-Roman Empire as it moved through, and partially an advent of Christianity, you're going to lose something very, very valuable. And so the question is how to protect that. And what I hear from people who have argued about this amendment is that this is going to do it. And I keep saying, no, it's not. But the people of Virginia have a right to do as they want to do.
Steve, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Lewis in Charlottesville. Lewis, you're on with John Whitehead.
Hello, how you doing?
Hey.
I have two questions here for you. And I'm talking about, I just wanted to ask you about, I'm at PVCC and they're trying to force me to sign an academic contract that I'm not really... agree with.
So hold on, Lewis. You're a student at PVCC, and
right.
You say that they're asking you to sign some kind of contract as a student?
Yeah. Like an academic contract?
An academic contract.
Yes. And
your objection to it is what?
That it's unfair because I have a learning disability, and it's not fair that... I think that the state could come in and say, oh, you have to sign this contract and you don't meet the requirements. We got to. That's more grounds to kick you out.
You can call our offices and talk to one of our lawyers. Our number is 978-3888, and we'd be glad to talk to you about that.
Lewis, okay. Do you get the phone number? It's 978-3888 at the Rutherford right. Institute, and the website, of course, is rutherford.org. You were talking earlier about the genius of federalism. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah, it's really the basis of our government. It's you know, severely attacked by the federal government today, which basically involves itself heavily into the states. And that's, you know, when you get into national amendments on the same-sex marriage, you really get into the destruction of federalism. But, you know, if Virginia wants to have an amendment like this, under federalism, it's politically the thing to do. If New Jersey doesn't want it, they don't have to have it. So you have diversity of states, and states rule their own little provinces with their own problems and their own solutions. That way, the genius of federalism is basically dividing power up. You have local, state, cities all having powers in the federal government. So each different locality has its own power. But you really don't have that today because the federal government has become so powerful and so strong.
And, of course, the genius of federalism doesn't excuse it took strong federal action in Washington to bring the rights to African Americans. So when we refer to the genius of federalism, there's also a danger there where we can err on the side of state.
Well, that's
rights.
Why you have judges. I hear so many people attacking judges today. The why judges exist, and I keep telling people this, is not to read a law book and say, here are the three rules that you have to apply, because anybody can do that. You don't even have to be a lawyer to do that. But what judges, the reason judges exist for us is to do justice. And sooner or later, enough's enough. And they decide that in Brown versus Board of Education. They said segregated schools were unconstitutional. They were wrong. And I think at a certain point, it's called equity, equitable remedies. At a certain point, we have to make those kind of decisions. And it's not all that clear sometimes in the Constitution. So that's why you have judges there. Judges have to look at things and just make big decisions. But to be honest with you, our present administration in Washington really attacks judges. There's a few things, in my opinion, that stand between us and tyranny in this country. I look at this a lot because I work in this area, dealing with what we see happening in Washington and our governments and with our police often. the Bill of Rights. We got to really protect our Bill of Rights, and we've got to allow judges to be able to look at cases and not be intimidated by the U.S. Attorney General, for example, or who just warned judges not to go against the authority of the president. First of all, that's the right of judges to do that. That's why you have the three co-equal branches, legislative, judicial, and executive. That's why the judges are there. They're to correct the president. They're there to correct a state legislature if they've gone too far. And it's not always what we like, but that's what democracy is about.
John Whitehead is the founder and executive director of the Rutherford Institute. That's rutherford.org on the website. And Lewis, again, that phone number, if you're listening, is 978-3888. And I'm sure there's any number of attorneys at the Rutherford Institute who can help you figure out that contract at PVCC and answer any questions you might have about that. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for some local news and weather. When we get back, we will continue our discussion with John Whitehead. The phone lines are open, folks, at 977-1070. Our guest is John Whitehead, the founder and the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. That's rutherford.org, 978-3888. You, like everybody else, are watching this this run-up to November 7th. Big news, national news, state news, there's a whole lot going on. What's your take on what's happening with these elections?
Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal NBC poll just released shows that voter approval of Congress is at 16%. It's the lowest in the 17-year history. George Bush is now viewed negatively by 50% of the majority, tying the worst rating of his presidency. And, you know, the president senses it because he's been his party's in trouble, obviously.
He's been singing a different tune lately, hadn't he?
Yeah. He's
very different.
Crisscrossing the country in Air Force One with an entire staff. And in the past 15 months, he's raised around $200 million for about 30 Republican candidates. But the amazing thing is, you and I are paying for this. Because what they do is they do an official event, like where he cuts a ribbon, and he goes off and does five or six fundraisers. If he does that, then we have to pay for most of it. And you're talking about Secret Service. It costs like $60,000 an hour just for Air Force One to be in operation.
Golly.
The American taxpayer, again, is paying. If you disagree with the Republican Party, you're paying for the reelection of those people that the president's pushing for. I don't agree with it because, first of all, I don't care if it's Bill Clinton, if it's Ronald Reagan, whoever. If it's Hillary Clinton as the next president, they should not be flying around running for reelection after the first 2 years of trying to get their own party back in.
On our buck.
No, they're there to represent us, the American people. And I think it's just we let it go on. The news media lets it go on. They don't report it. We have a Congress now that works half the time it did in 1948. They call it now the Tuesday to Thursday Club. They show up on Thursday and they're out of town. That's exactly what they call it. Trent Lott was just asked about Congress, the Republican from Mississippi, and he said, we haven't done anything worth a toot in 3 months. That's what he said. And so the question I think people have to look at is in these elections coming up, whether it's our local congressional races or whatever, do we want to put these people back in power? And the second question is, will those we elect to replace them, will they be any better?
Yeah. Well, that's the challenge with when you only have these two choices, Republicans and Democrats. And, you know, many people argue that what we're looking at is just two sides of the same coin.
Point. Yeah, because, everybody knows, anybody with any sense knows, that today to get into power, you have to have the approval of certain groups. And you know, corporations are very, 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 very powerful. And the thing is, like I was saying earlier, when I go to the store, I got 20 coal messages to choose from, but right. I only have two people that, when they're running for president. And it's 300 million people in the United States, and we can't come up with more than two people to vote for. And we can't hear the other people that may be running for president, even on the debates. We can't hear what they have to say. And the thing is, these debates they have, I didn't realize it till a couple years ago, but when they ask the question, the president or whoever's running against him, the two candidates, already know all the questions. They've researched them. So it's not a debate. It's a propaganda statement. They're up there just answering questions they already know the answers to. They've researched. There's nothing impromptu. So the whole idea of democracy is being lost. So I think that we really have to rethink how we're doing things in this country, because the government's no longer accountable to the average American. And go back to the president flying around the country raising money on Air Force One. Most people, if they really think about it, should object to that, because it's morally wrong, and it's something that he should not be doing. And it's not that I'm against George Bush. I'm against Clinton. And Reagan was one of the first. President Reagan was one of the first to do that.
Yeah. So this wasn't a normal thing way back when. No. They didn't just fly around and pretend
You go back to the greater presidents like the Eisenhowers and stuff. They wouldn't think of doing something like this. So things have changed, and it's a thing that we don't keep up with things. No matter how much news and how many channels we have, we live in a soundbite society, and no one's paying attention, and people don't read anymore. There's a book out. It's a very good book called Fog Facts, and it's an idea that most of the relevant news is somewhere on an internet page, but you never see it on CNN.
And what's it called again?
Fog Facts, F-O-G-F-A-C-T-S, Fog Facts. It's absolutely true.
We're talking with John Whitehead. He's the founder and executive director of the Rutherford Institute. Susan is on the phone in Schuyler. Susan, thanks for the call. You're on with John Whitehead.
Thank you very much. I am concerned about democracy and the way that our country is going, and I was wondering what Mr. Whitehead had to say about the Strategic Prosperity Pact that Bush and Vicente Fox and the Canadian Prime Minister signed.
The Strategic
Prosperity Pact. Project.
And what's your take on it, Susan?
Well, my take is I would be very concerned. I think every American citizen should be concerned. Are you aware of what it is?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, go ahead and define it.
Okay, it's a pact that they signed that they are working on, and they have a book you can get from the Committee on Foreign Relations, if you call them. It's called Building a North American Community, and their aim is to have a single perimeter border, to have everybody have the same economic benefits, to provide much better education in Mexico, and that's just the beginning. The book is 164 pages or so.
Yeah, I'm aware of this.
You are? Okay. Yeah, it sounds like an EU for North America. Is it?
Well, that's exactly what it sounds like. So I was wondering what your take was on it.
Yeah, I would be very, very nervous about any of that because, again, America's a unique place, and we have so many problems ourselves. We're not going to be able to fix Canada's problems or Mexico's problems. And, you know, I think that if we're going to survive for the future of this country, there's a lot of things we have to do internally. But to be entering those kind of pacts, I think, is quite dangerous, unless it's something less than what I think it is. But
what's the motivation? Is it purely just a corporate move that it makes sense for corporations to be able to have this type of reach?
I really don't have the motivations behind it. I just know that, obviously they obviously business interests figure into anything we do today.
Yeah. Charles is on the phone in Albemarle. Charles and Susan, thank you for the call. Charles, you're on with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. Go right ahead.
Mr. Whitehead, you a few moments ago talked about the Tuesday to Thursday Club.
Yeah.
And when Gerald Ford was elected to Congress, Congress would convene and complete the business of the people by the 4th of July recess and go home. I think it's interesting now that we come in Tuesday to Thursday, we can't get the people's business done, and Congress is probably charging, I'd hate to think the number of multiples for their lack of service to the people.
Yeah, you know that Congress is expected to meet about 70 days this year. 20 years ago, it was 162 days. So they have a part-time job.
Yeah.
They get a full-time salary.
And what's the salary compared to now versus then?
Much you know. More obviously.
And you know what amazes me, too, is they keep getting paid even when they are gone, don't they? You get this, like, tenure, and you keep getting your salary.
You have to go back. You look at the original Constitution and what the framers of the Constitution, they never saw any of this as a full-time business. And that's why I've advocated term limits for everybody, even the president. And Coy and I were talking, 6 years is a good term limit for a president because every president now, within the first 2 years, starts running for president again. And what you get is someone who's out basically doing fundraisers, and his staff is running the country.
Yeah.
And
they're just working to get a second term. And history shows us the second term is always much worse than the first term. It doesn't even compare. Even Jefferson's second term was horrible compared to the first.
Well, they're saying George Bush was a lame duck. He'll be a lame duck soon. But he's really into his second term. He was a lame duck because that was it. The thing is, term limits are very, very important. We need them for our senators and our Congress. We need them for federal judges. It's time to these people to be accountable. The only way you can make these people accountable is to make sure that it's just a short period of time. And it's good to have freshness. It's good to have turnovers in the legislature. It's good to have. Why have a judge on the Supreme Court for 40 years issuing bad opinions? why not have him on there for 10 years issuing a bad opinion?
Charles, did you have a follow-up?
No, it was, I just felt it was interesting because I saw Gerald Ford do an interview with Warren Berger, and he was commenting on this and also standing committees going from 20 to 200. It seems that all they do is push themselves forward and forget about the people at home.
Yeah, I think they do because, again, we're not holding them accountable. That's the point. If you send the same people back who are doing the same thing, which it looks like we may do that, and we have the same basic control of Congress, what we've said to them is that you're doing.
Keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, you keep doing what you're doing, and we approve. And the question is, people say they don't approve, but when they line up, they seem to vote the same way. And so I agree with some people say it's time to throw some of the scoundrels out and redo our system. If we don't, pretty soon, I'm afraid that the average citizen, when we want the Congress to do something about the minimum wage, and they refuse to do that, we want them to do something about the lobbying scandals that go on continually on that Hill.
And they didn't do anything. They put on a show, and that was it.
A recent report shows that the congressman's aides up there on the Hill spend millions of dollars a year flying to Europe and going to all kinds of things paid by lobbyists. The congressman can't do that, but their aides do that. So what's happened is we're getting scammed by the people we vote for. And it sounds terrible, and you know something? It is terrible. And like I say, it's well, you know, Mark Twain said it. He said the only true criminal class in America is Congress. So a lot of insight.
John, you are a fantastic student of history. Can a culture, can a society get to the point where it is too late, where there's a point of no return when it comes to poisoned leadership?
Obviously, that's true. I think that there's a really neat book. It's called The Fourth Turning. I don't know if you've ever seen it by Strauss and Howe. They wrote the 13th Generation book. But, yeah, they say that America really runs in about 100-year cycles, and we're moving into a crisis cycle right now. It's an excellent book. I really highly recommend it, but it'll wake you up. Basically, we're coming into a crisis cycle right now. And they say we could go either way. We could move into an authoritarian government, or a great period of chaos and creativity will come out of it.
And a new renaissance, basically.
The problem I see, though, and again, I do a lot of work in this
area. And before you go ahead, what's the title of the book again?
The Fourth Turning.
The Fourth Turning.
Yeah.
Okay.
With what we see happening in our schools, with the education level, and that was what Thomas Jefferson, and we all should be familiar with Thomas Jefferson since we're from Charlottesville, is he saw that for this country to work, you had to have an educated citizenry. And that what he meant by was not only could you read and write, which a lot of our students have trouble doing that, we had to know the Bill of Rights. We had to know what was in the First Amendment. We had to know what our rights are. But as all the polls show, even the young people and your average citizen cannot tell you what's even in the First Amendment. They can't list the five freedoms. They can't tell you what. They asked high school seniors a couple years ago what was in the First Amendment, and they said the craziest of things. Most of them didn't even know that the freedom of religion was in the First Amendment, or free speech, so a freedom of the press. Which, by the way, this Reporters Without Borders just ranked us 53rd in the world, the United States, in how they treat people in terms of the freedom of the press in this country.
I hadn't heard that. We'll have to do a story on that.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
We dropped from 17th to 53 in the last 4 years. So, but the American, it always go back. People say, what is the enemy? What enemy do we face? It's not the terrorists. It's the American people. The Constitution starts with those three valuable words, we the people. And we're responsible for what's going on the Hill.
John Whitehead is the founder and the executive director of the Rutherford Institute. That's www.rutherford.org, and the phone number is 978-3888. If you have a question for one of the Rutherford attorneys about your rights as an American citizen. John, it's always a special honor to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We look forward to talking to you again. This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.org.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.